And when you set out to find the truth, it's not really to find the truth, it's to find validation for what you already believe is the truth. It's to reinforce your fantasies. And you will reject anything that conflicts with your personal interests or your personal agenda. Oh, I've met so many third-degree Freemasons. They've gone up 3 degrees. They're third on the rung in the Blue Lodge. They don't know anything about the other degrees. I've never taken them, never studied them, don't know what's going on, and they'll swear to you that nothing's going on up there. And they're not the only ones.
Welcome back to BCFM's Politics Show with old Labour Oxford economist Martin Summers and me, Tony Gosling. Private Eye say satanic ritual abuse is a fantasy. These crimes are too hideous to be true. Or are they? Yes, he's gone, but not forgotten. The plucky Conservative MP for Huddersfield in the 1980s was receiving threatening phone calls and had his home burgled twice after going to Home Secretary Leon Britton. That's the MP Geoffrey Dickens. He was handing over paedophile dossier after paedophile dossier, which then disappeared. But he got burgled by MI5 for his trouble, in fact. Anyway, so Theresa May in 2014 came out with nothing, even though she looked for these dossiers, raising further questions about whether the Home Office is the right body to manage the increasingly limited child sex abuse inquiry. Make sure your radio's turned down if children are around, because we'll be hearing tonight from the man himself speaking in the 1980s in the light of another Home Office VIP paedophile cover-up. We look back tonight at accusations made by Tory MP Geoffrey Dickens in Parliament and on television. Also, we preview next week's Secret Rulers of the NATO Countries annual Bilderberg meeting. The High Priests of Globalisation, they say, the creators of the EU. That's the West's Secret Kingmakers Conference next week in Turin, Italy. Yes, Italy, where Goldman Sachs inspired pro-Euro, pro-EU technocrat government's just been appointed. That's right, appointed, not elected, just like the EU Commission. But more to the point, this flies in the face of what the hapless Italian people voted for back in March. Will Theresa May's replacement be invited to Bilderberg next week? And the Babchenko resurrection, that's the Ukrainian journalist that came back from the grave. Also the political earthquakes in Spain and Italy. And tariff boy Trump calls President Assad an animal, as Assad tells the Americans to get out of his country or else. Our sister show Dialects back on BCFM 93.2 at noon every Tuesday. You can catch it online now at dialectradio.co.uk. This week, whatever happened to the BBC? How did it go from the educational and entertaining friend in the corner to becoming the lying spearhead of the war machine? We hear from two former BBC staff, Nicola Wakeham and Ian Hilpus, who both worked at the Limegrove Studios on programmes including Esther Ranson's comical Sunday night consumer show, That's Life. But that is Dialect on BCFM at noon next Tuesday. Download it from dialectradio.co.uk now if you like. But Martin, let's start with this, I think it most incredible story of the week, really, which is Yevgeny Babchenko, the Ukrainian journalist who died but then actually didn't die.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's even the anti-Putin media in the West have raised their eyebrows about this, because it's, you know, it's basically using, manipulating people quite deliberately to see the Russians in a bad light, whatever else is going on. And it obviously raises questions about the Skripal case. I mean, obviously.
Well, why? What's the connection between?
Well, no, there is in my mind, because obviously, if you Wiltshire police, one of the potential perpetrators of the Skripal attack would be the Ukrainian SBU, who carried out a sting operation here, pretending to kill somebody in order to try and discredit the Russians. They would have a motive for attacking Skripal to get the British to hate the Russians. And it's quite clear that the SBU in Ukraine worked very closely with the NATO intelligence services over the Maidan shootings, over the shooting down of the MH17, over the Odessa Trade Union Hall massacre. They've got a track record of engaging in provocations, working with Western intelligence services, but also they've got their own motives for trying to steer the West into conflict with the Russians, because they are hoping for support from the West against their enemies in Moscow. Well, and all of these things should be the sort of thing that police officers should be looking at when they're investigating these cases.
Noticeably, Radio Free Europe and Radio Liberty again seem to be at the forefront of this. Not the other, many of the other news sources around Europe are not covering it, but they're saying that the lawyer says the Ukrainian authorities have named the alleged organiser of the plot to kill Babchenko. Ukrainian authorities identified the Ukrainian citizen accused of being recruited by Russia's secret services to organise a murder plot against the self-exiled Russian reporter and Kremlin critic Arkady. Sorry, it wasn't Yevgeny. Arkady Babchenko. In a Kiev courtroom on May the 31st, that's yesterday, prosecutors accused Boris Herman of overseeing the alleged Russian plot. There's one major flaw with this whole story, Martin, to my mind, and that is that so what they're saying is that they needed to fake this murder in order to wrong foot the real assassin. Now, the real assassin would have known that he wasn't actually murdered because he hadn't actually murdered him.
Well, yes, and of course they may just be lying about this as well. The SBU in the Ukraine were probably behind the shootings in the Maidan Square at the beginning of the crisis. And of course there's been court cases in Kiev where Georgian snipers have testified in court in Kiev saying that they carried out the shootings. And they were basically orchestrated by NATO intelligence services. They even said there was an American colonel who gave the orders. Now, most people in the West are blissfully unaware of what's been going on in the Ukraine, apart from, oh, the Russians are doing nasty things. There's quite a lot of journalists being killed in the Ukraine, mostly journalists critical of the current government of the Ukraine.
More information is coming out about this chap. It's Herman. What's his first name? Gosh. Anyway, Mr. Herman, who's being accused of all of this. And that is that his lawyer, Yevhen Soldoko, has confirmed that he was the director of a Ukrainian-German arms manufacturer called Schmeisser. Now, I seem to remember Schmeisser machine pistols used in the Second World War, actually, describing the firm as the only non-state arms production enterprise in Ukraine. So if he was going to be murdering Babchenko, he would have had plenty of weapons at his disposal, being a director of an arms manufacturer.
Well, we remain to see what's going to happen about this. You could always argue in case, even if this comes to trial, and I'm not sure that it ever will. You've got the question of basically of where people are set up.
Oh, Boris Herman. I mean, he's the perfect guy to be an assassin. He's the director of a manufacturer of machine guns.
Yes, well, we don't know who this guy is or what his relationship with the Russian secret services is, do we? We don't know anything, really. But what we do know, because there's already been a court case in Kiev, that the snipers that killed 80-odd people, including police officers and protesters, were definitely from Georgia, and that they were orchestrated by NATO intelligence services working with Pravi Sector and the current SBU. And don't forget, of course, the Ukrainians were part of the Soviet Union, and they would have had access to Novichok, for example, and it would be a
We're not talking about the Skripal case. We're talking about this case.
You've got to put it in context, Tony. The SBU, the Ukrainian secret services, are liars. Proven liars, and they work very closely with CIA and MI6.
Are you saying that the Russians aren't?
We don't know what's happening here, but we do know that both the MH17 shoot down, the Malaysians this week have said they're not satisfied that the Russians had anything to do with it. We didn't hear much about that on our mainstream media, did we? The Malaysian government has said we've nothing that's come out convinces us in any way that the Russians had anything to do with this.
Why all this interest in Ukraine at the moment then?
Well, because what's happening is that we are now going to, don't forget, there was a possibility of a war with the Ukrainian government attacking Donetsk and Luhansk when the snow's melted. And the other possibility is when the World Cup kicks off, just as then the Sochi Olympics started, then there will be an offensive. And they've been given Javelin anti-tank missiles by the Americans. British military personnel are over there training them. The Azov Battalion, the ones who wear the swastikas, they've been given arms training by our people. And of course, the whole point of this is we're going to war in Syria, Ukraine and elsewhere.
And the other irony here is that there's been several pro-Russian journalists who have actually been really murdered.
We've heard hardly anything about. In Ukraine, lots of people who are critical of the current regime have ended up dead, but we've heard nothing about it, and of course nobody's been
punished. Now, you and others talk about Ukraine as actually a fascist country now. Is that any actual evidence
for
that?
The point is that it's a country that's in meltdown. The Andrei Perebi, who's the equivalent of Speaker Berkov in the parliament over there, he was basically implicated in lots of massacres, including
Turned Berko into a Russian there. Berkov.
I'm just pointing out that because he's a Speaker of the Parliament, he can't be charged with anything, even though it's pretty clear that he was involved. He was in control of the buildings from which the snipers killed the protesters and the police officers at the beginning of the crisis. And I think that's pretty decisive.
Apparently also the justice system in Ukraine is breaking down too.
Well, it would be, because what you've actually got there is a it's basically a failed state, and they've got a very militant right wing who are very well armed, and they work very closely with NATO intelligence services. Perebi worked with CIA, MI6 to carry out the coup, and of course Umas Piets, the former Estonian foreign minister, spoke to Catherine Ashton on the telephone. He said, well, we've just been around the hospitals. It's pretty clear that the snipers who killed all these protesters and police officers are working for the new regime, not the old regime, the new regime. But of course nobody's been punished. British military personnel are probably involved in this. They should be sent to prison for 25 years. It won't happen. It should.
Moving on to North Korea now, it looks like the meeting's back on again.
Well, we've just got to keep our fingers crossed and see if common sense can prevail.
Isn't this just to do with the art of the deal that Trump was, this famous book that Trump wrote years ago, where the idea is that you put out some kind of, I mean, he's an enormous increase in threats against North Korea. Was that just in order to try and bring them to the table?
Well, that's what Trump would say, but it's not what brought them to the table. What brought them to the table is the South Koreans went to talk to Kim Jong-un, and then they very smartly, when they'd spoken to him, they didn't speak to the State Department, they didn't speak to anybody, they went straight to Trump and said, Kim Jong-un wants to meet you.
I mean,
Trump then said, oh, great, I'll meet him. And, of course, Trump hadn't discussed it with anybody, they all went bonkers.
I mean, this whole word denuclearization is what the Americans have been using. They are actually, it seems, expecting the North Koreans to get rid of all their nuclear weapons, although actually the North Koreans seem to be going to this meeting saying, well, actually all we're really offering is to stop doing tests. So they've got like a car crash meeting.
Well, it is. I mean, either side can pull out. The point is that they have got nuclear weapons, and that's the only reason the Americans are talking to them. If they didn't have nuclear weapons, Trump wouldn't be going to talk to them.
Isn't this really a proxy war being fought, not war, sorry, diplomatic war being fought out between China and Beijing and Washington via the two ports, yes. Two Koreas.
Yes, this is what this is about. The Americans want to keep their forces in South Korea because it creates a pressure point on the Chinese. But, of course, the South Koreans don't particularly want the Americans there. And if they could do a deal with the North Koreans, backed by the Chinese and the Americans, the Americans have got to be included in the deal, they're aware of that, then it could have US forces could be removed from Korea and North Korea could be treated like East Germany was. So, in other words, it just becomes integrated into South Korea and the Chinese, of course, would guarantee that they don't have a democracy in China, so the North Koreans don't have to fear about being forced to have a democratic election. We can just ease tensions here and try and do some business.
Let's just go back to one of the stories we dealt with in the first hour. That is this visa payment disruption right across Europe. Now, this is quite a fragile system we've built here, isn't it?
Well, it is. It's fragile in every way. If you remember in 2008, when the banks were bailed out, and of course we're now selling RBS back to the private sector at a loss to the taxpayer in this country, the danger was that and this will happen if the Italian crisis turns into what it may turn into, then what will happen is people will go to the cash points and their money that they think they've got, they won't be able to get it. That's nearly happened in 2008. It could happen again, and then of course we will see what happens. People will go
mad.
I
mean, the banks owning the card, the cash point network, the Visa network, the Link network, I mean, surely in a way, they can hold a gun to the government's head at any point they wish, can't they?
Yeah, that's pretty much what they did in 2008. And of course, in actual fact, once you've bailed the banking system out, you could argue that it should be run by the government, since we've paid for it all. It should be run as a public utility.
I mean, if you've got any confidence...
retail banking should be run as a public utility.
Have you got any confidence that Philip Hammond is able to stand up to these people?
No. There's no confidence. I mean, if there is another crash, you see, the Italian crisis isn't about the euro and it isn't about the eurozone. It's about Deutsche Bank. And if Deutsche Bank crashes, then RBS will crash, Barclays will crash, and we will get to the situation we nearly got to in 2008, where everybody's money just disappears in a puff of smoke. And then we will see what happens after that. But that's absolutely what we should have been talking about for the last 8 years. I mean, never mind Brexit.
What we're hearing about today is long queues of 40, 50 people waiting to use a cash point. Sometimes these cards are working, sometimes they're not. The same sort of thing, somebody talking about having £240 worth of things that they were trying to buy at B&Q. All the cards, his cards just wouldn't go through, so he just had to drive back home and get another card and then try and get some money and go back and buy what he wanted. I mean, this is a quite fragile system, as I said, but are there any ways to circumvent it other than just carrying more cash around?
Well, I mean, the IT problems are you know, endemic and generic to the setup, but we shouldn't have a private banking system propped up with quantitative easing by the taxpayer. I mean, it's quite clear that RBS being sold at a loss to the taxpayer, we were told that that wouldn't be added to the national debt because we were going to get all of our money back. We haven't got our money back. If RBS is sold to the private sector, that means we bailed out the shareholders of RBS. They walked away with millions of pounds of our money, and of course they are wealthy people in our society. They should have lost their money because they were shareholders. They should have lost their money at that point. They should have been wiped out, which meant they'd have had to sell their houses, go down the dole, or whatever they'd have to do. But they didn't. They got bailed out, and that's where the money's gone. Not to house people, not to put them into jobs. The wealthy classes have had their assets backed up by the taxpayer, and that shouldn't have happened. And of course what that means is when we come to take the money off them, that's not market allocation of resources. Asset prices have been artificially pushed up by quantitative easing, and when the crash comes, we're going to come and take that money off them because they don't deserve it. They didn't work for it. It's not theirs. It's ours.
The Trump administration this week's taken a major step towards a global trade war, according to the World Socialist website. Well, we kind of know that. This is steel and aluminium tariffs. Now, this hasn't really gone down very well in Brussels, has it?
It's not gone down very well anywhere, because they've declared war simultaneously on everybody of all their trading partners. And of course, they're going to retaliate, and the possibility of that is there's going to be a crash. And on the back of the crash, the banks will collapse.
Hang on a minute.
We're back to where we started.
Martin, are they, well, not necessarily. The banks aren't necessarily going to...
Oh, I think they are, Tony. They are.
You've been going on about this for...
Yes, because it only happens once. It only happens once by definition.
Calm down. You've been going on about this for 10 years. Maybe it will happen. Happen, but this
it will.
Why will this trigger it? I'm not even going to ask you that question. I mean, the real problem here is that you know there's all sorts of other conflicts going on in other parts of the world. This is not actually sowing the seeds of unity to deal with them. It's really, I mean, Trump did get elected, didn't he, to do this?
Yes,
this is one of his election on his election platform. Why shouldn't he do it?
Well, because he got less votes than Hillary Clinton and the system.
No, he's been elected to be president. No,
yeah, but under a non-democratic system.
Oh, you don't
system.
Like the system?
No, well, Sisi got elected in Italy, Egypt,
on
40% of the vote, where the opposition were all in prison.
If somebody is elected on a platform, it's their duty and their job to carry it out.
No. Sisi got elected.
Yes, it is.
No, it's not. But in any case, if he does this, and of course he's within his powers to do it.
It's a great international difficulty, but Trump was elected to do it.
All right, I'll put aside whether
we've
he's
had
got
a similar sort of thing going on in Martin. We've had a similar sort of thing going on in Italy, haven't we? Everybody in Italy back in March, overwhelmingly, actually. Although, actually, it's not, you know, something like a 10% majority the two parties had as a coalition. They have voted basically to have a referendum to get out of the euro and possibly out of the EU as well. And they've been told this week, oh, you can't do that because it's going to be bad for trade. In fact, they had the German trade commissioner telling them that, well, the markets will actually persuade you to vote the other way. So what's more important, what people want through the ballot box or the markets? Now, that is the case with both these stories.
Okay.
It was the case in Greece as well, and of course it was quite clear that the Greek government had to knuckle under unless they were going to go to war with Germany. And of course they did go to war with Germany in the 1960s, 1970s, because it was a military government in Greece, backed by the West.
Are you saying that the Germany and German army were going to fight the Greek army?
No, you're
exaggerating.
No, I'm not exaggerating, because we're on the cusp of all of this. Most people don't realise how serious this all is. Macron was saying the other day that we've actually had peace in Europe since 1945. It's not even true. It's not even true. And when France tried to take itself out of NATO's integrated structure in the 1960s, assassination attempts on de Gaulle, that's the real world, Tony. And of course, we're talking about Ukraine. They're part of Europe. There's a war going on there. People dying every day. Now, let's come back to this question of Italy. In actual fact, there was no both the Liga and the Grillisti said that they weren't going to call a referendum on the euro. So, in actual fact, they don't have a mandate to take the country out of the euro. What's actually happened is that they've gone back to try and form another government, but they can't have the finance minister they wanted, so they've nominated somebody else.
Why can't they? The president won't let them.
Because the president's got the power not to let them form a government, because that's in the constitution of Italy. Yeah? Now, of course, you could say that's not fair. I don't think it's fair that under the Electoral College, Trump should be the president of the US, but that's the rules. And, of course, in Italy, Mattarella has got the power to say, I'm not having this government. Now, of course, you could say that puts Italy on a collision course.
Okay, let's look at that.
It puts Italy on a collision course with the Germans, and if they get what they want, and of course, the markets are already...
So, if Jeremy Corbyn gets elected here, can the Queen actually say, no, I'm not going to let you be Prime Minister?
Well, the people in the army and the secret services have already said he shouldn't be Prime Minister. And of course, that's what if there was a coup against him, it would no doubt be.
What if the Queen or Prince Charles, if he's in charge, says, oh, I'm not, just not going to accept that person as Prime Minister?
Well, that can happen, Tony. It can happen. And then, of course, we have to decide who's armed and who's ready to fight and who isn't.
It sounds like our democracy is almost as fragile as our Visa card payment.
Well, exactly.
System.
What's going to happen is all of this is going to come to a head. Now, the Italian situation, the Italian bonds are already trading much higher against German euro bonds than before. Even as this crisis develops, at a certain point, the markets may panic. And at that point, they start selling Italian bonds, Italian banks collapse. Deutsche Bank collapses, the main bank in Germany, because they're the ones that are most exposed here. And it won't be about the euro, and it won't be about the European Union. It'll be about a banking crash. And people will queue up, as they're doing now, to try and get their money out of the bank, and they won't be able to get it out. And then, of course, we're going to war with Russia, Iran. All of that will be kicking in at the same time. We're going there. And people say that, oh, I've been predicting this for years and it hasn't happened. That's because in a car crash, you only hit the wall once. And of course, eventually, if you're driving towards the wall at 90 miles an hour, you're going to hit that wall.
Okay.
There is nothing in the international financial system since 2008 which makes a crash anything other than inevitable. And it's not just me saying this. Left-wing economists, right-wing economists, all economists know that there's going to be a crash. It's only a question of when and how long we can put it off.
Okay, well, they can put it off as long as they want because
they're
in charge of the banking system.
No, they're in charge of the banking system, but the banking system itself is fragile. For example, if Brexit starts to go wrong for Britain, then Carney was saying the other day, well, we'll have to have some more quantitative easing. We already had quantitative easing after the Brexit vote, which is why, of course, everybody still thinks it's all okay because they're still on the heroin. But eventually, of course, that will not work. They're running out of road.
But they're going to kick the can down the road.
No, they've been kicking the can down the road for 8 years. We're coming to the end of the road.
No, we're not.
We are coming to the end of the road. Trump setting off his trade wars is a clear sign. It's a clear sign that we're now going into the final phase of this. And of course, the only reason why the Americans have got a massive trade deficit with everybody else is because they've got a huge budget deficit.
Okay.
If they want to get their trade deficit down, they've got to stop fighting wars on other people's money.
Running to the end of the road, it does seem as if President Assad and Donald Trump are. I mean, 2 months ago or so, Donald Trump was talking about pulling out his troops from Syria. Now, there's none of that. And he's calling President Assad an animal. And President Assad is saying, well, actually, I'd rather you moved your troops and your American soldiers out of my country, and if you don't, I'm going to have to make you.
Well, that's right. That's what's going to happen. There's going to be a showdown. It's the OK Corral. And, of course, it's going to... The Syrians have taken huge casualties, 160,000 military casualties, millions dead, and they can take the pressure because, of course, it's going to be... The US is going to crack up here because everybody's going to gang up on them.
They've decided to go to war against everybody simultaneously to try and keep their hegemonic position at the top of the international system, the petrodollar and all the rest of it. But we're reaching the point where everybody else is so fed up with them that we're going to... It's going to be very difficult for the Tory government here. See, Liam Fox, even Liam Fox doesn't agree with Trump whacking tariffs on our steel. And anybody who thinks that by leaving the euro we can then get into bed with the Americans are deluded.
The US backed Syrian Democratic Forces. This is the latest name for the Free Syrian Army or whatever.
It's the YPG.
Responding to the Syrian President Assad. They are saying that Assad cannot recover territory through military action, responding to Syrian President Bashar al-Assad's talk of forcibly expelling US forces, ultimately recruiting all of its reuniting all of its territory under government control. Kurdish dominated SDF, Syrian Democratic Forces, says there will be no way Syria could recover that territory by military action. They're now backed by the Americans, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. And of course the Kurdish part of northern Syria, they actually control the oil fields at Deir ez-Zor and around there, which never had a Kurdish majority. And in actual fact, there's an armed struggle developing against the Kurds,
roughly about a quarter of the area of Syria, the top right hand triangle.
That area never had a Kurdish majority.
I think what I'll do is I'll put a map on our show
page. Yeah, but never had a Kurdish majority.
I'll put a map on our show page at thisweek.org.uk. Just to let people know whereabouts we're talking about, because obviously, you know, it's very difficult to describe. Martin.
Well, I'd also point out this, that the SDF are aligned with the PKK in Turkey, and they want to take a big chunk of Turkey out. But, of course, Erdogan is never going to accept that Turkey should lose territory to the YPG PKK axis. So it's quite possible that the Syrian army and the Turkish army will crush the Kurds in the northern... But first of all, they've got to crush the FSA and ISIS.
The Israelis have been bombing this week, and also in Syria, and there's a ceasefire apparently has returned some calm to the Gaza-Israeli border. Red Cross is sending war surgeons to Gaza to treat the heavy casualties, and the US will veto any UN draft on protecting Palestinians, apparently, says Nikki Haley.
Yeah, well, I mean, the whole situation is turning into potentially unstoppable war. I mean, when Trump made his ultimatum to the Iranians, it was very similar to the Austrian note to the Serbs in 1914. There's no way they can possibly fulfil what they're asking. And the Russians are sitting in the middle there trying to negotiate with everybody to prevent the war. But if people keep pushing for it, then it's going to happen. And of course, it won't do very good for shares around the world. Oil price will go up, which will help the Russians, of course. And they're prepared to fight.
Is the American equipment up to the job?
No.
And I'll tell you one reason it's not, and that is because a brand new Navy aircraft carrier and floating catastrophe, so this one particular article says, is the USS Gerald R. Ford is forced to return to a naval station Norfolk in Virginia after encountering issues with its propulsion train. The second critical failure to the propulsion systems, the next generation supercarrier, after a previously undisclosed failure was initially discovered months ago. Now, you know, obviously billions of dollars poured into building amazing aircraft carrier. It can't even chug along.
Yeah, but the point is that people have made their money making it. It's not supposed to do anything. And, of course, aircraft carriers are obsolete. The Iskander missile, the SS-300, the Silkworm missiles that the Chinese have developed, aircraft carriers are just sitting ducks. And when the fighting starts, that's going to become very clear.
Anyway, what do you make of what the Israelis have been up to in Syria and Gaza this week?
Well, they're pushing for a war with Iran. That's what they want. They want a war with Iran. And the British people had better realise we're aligned with Syria, with Israel via the Americans. And if there's a war with Iran, there's been an expansion of British, I think they sent an aircraft carrier or a ship to Bahrain, because we've got no money for homeless people in this country, but we're going to build a whole new base for the Navy in Bahrain, where the people don't want us, of course, where the Al-Khalifa family that were put in power when Britain left in 1971 are still running the place. Completely against the will of the majority of the people. And of course, they would be justified in the same way that Syrians are justified in taking up arms against their government. That means arms against the British military personnel that are going to be in this base that we're paying for. We withdrew from east of Suez in 1967, but in actual fact, we've got loads of money to spend on going back east of Suez, and that's what we're doing. Whatever for.
answer that, your own question. Because who's behind this and why?
Because who's behind it? We're doing what the Americans want us to do. They want us to have a new base there, and so that's what we're doing. We don't want... Most people in this country have no interest whatsoever in having a new naval base in Bahrain, especially the people in Bahrain don't want us there. That's fundamental. So, of course, any British military personnel are in Bahrain, if it does come to a war, they are legitimate targets of the Bahraini patriots. Of course they are. If we're not pacifists, then we've got to fight.
BCFM. As I said at the top of the hour, Private Eye talk about satanic ritual abuse as a fantasy. These crimes are too hideous to be true. But are they? Back in the 1980s, the Conservative MP for Huddersfield, and he actually moved his constituency to a nearby constituency because the boundaries changed as well. His name was Geoffrey Dickens. And Martin, this really, what he did is he took several dossiers to Leon Britton, who was the Home Secretary, who promptly lost them.
Well, I mean, this has been ongoing for a long time, isn't it? And they just keep trying to kick it into the long grass.
What are your thoughts about...
I mean,
we heard from Mark Watts, was it 3 weeks ago now, that this latest, what they call National Inquiry, which actually doesn't include Scotland anymore or Northern Ireland anymore, and the various pieces are being taken off it as it sort of goes along. Mm-hmm. And he was saying, effectively, it's being ridiculously denuded, although it may come up with some answers. It's going to take ages. And his main point, I think, was the idea of the Home Office effectively investigating itself, because the Home Office has been at the heart of some of the previous cover-ups of this VIP defile scandal.
Yeah, well, as you know, inquiries in Britain are no longer independent of the executive. They never were entirely independent, if you think about the first Bloody Sunday inquiry and so on. But, of course, they've been made more. And so inquiries just become a way of saying, oh, we're having an inquiry, so there's nothing to talk about here. Just shut up and get it and go away. And then the inquiry takes years and years and years, and it doesn't do anything. And that's the whole point of it. Nothing gets done.
Well... I mean, these issues have to be dealt with one way or another, whether it's through the police. I'll just ask you now to make sure your radio is turned down if children are around, because we'll be hearing tonight from Geoffrey Dickens himself, speaking in the 1980s in an anonymous, at least the name of it is not known, but it was a documentary shown on British television. And here is Geoffrey Dickens himself.
My club became a hangout.
Actually, no, that wasn't Geoffrey Dickens. This is.
When I spoke out in the House of Commons in London about this, many of the members of Parliament smirked and jeered behind their hands because they were unwilling to believe NSPCC, which is our National Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Children, their inspectors that look after children at risk all over the country, were reporting that throughout the United Kingdom they were finding evidence of satanic abuse. And so that really reaffirmed what I've been telling the House of Commons.
Jim Phillips was a doctor of medicine with the police force before he opened his own private practice in Birmingham. Lately, he's more and more focused on victims of abuse in early childhood. He's achieved tremendous results with people who've been regarded hopeless cases within traditional psychotherapy. Perhaps he's most well known for his treatment of patients with multiple personality disorder.
All Satanists have been abused as children. All. I can't imagine any normal person going into something so horrific, vile, disgusting, so violent, humiliating. It's impossible.
As the children disclosed, I became more and more distressed at what they were telling me, and not a little frightened myself, in fact, because they were telling me things that you only saw in horror films and read in fictitious books.
And so a breakdown in communication, a breakdown in co-working happened in Nottinghamshire, and that became a cause which the nation began to take notice of.
What I had to do was sacrifice one of my own children. I was about 16, been going out with this girl that was involved in Satanism. She fell pregnant, and the same day that the child was born, I had to kill it.
child, when it is first born, is innocent and pure. It's untouched, it's unspoiled. Nothing bad has ever entered that child. That child's thoughts are pure. So they sacrifice that to the devil as the child being pure. Because all things pure are feared by Satanists and also by the devil. So if you've got something pure and you destroy it, you take away the purity and there's no longer a threat there.
They really do think that if they can take away innocence and give it to Satan, that they're giving him the greatest gift of all. They do it for all kinds of reasons. The first reason is to dirty the child inside and out, and the second reason is to destroy the innocence.
Where is the proof? Where are the traces? Where are the bodies?
One former witch who revealed to me that she had actually been present while a child was sacrificed said they do it in a different way. Normally, the high priest has relationships with some of the witches in the coven and they produce a child. And when that child is born, it's never registered as born, and therefore no one knows that child even came into the world. And I was told it was some of those children that were sacrificed.
I would be telephoned by someone to say, we've got a young woman who thinks she's had a baby but can't quite remember. Is this possible? Is it possible for things to happen to you that you've forgotten and you're beginning to remember? So I would say, it is possible, let's talk about it. And gradually the story would emerge of a young woman in her 20s who may have had anything up to 6 babies as a young girl between the ages of 11, 12 up to their early 20s, which were aborted and used for sacrifice in a variety of ways in covens.
Well, the same thing happens in ritualistic abuse. Yes, you stood and watched that baby be sacrificed and you didn't do anything about it. You actually abused the person next door to you. You actually subjected them to all kinds of sexual perversions. You were involved in that particular sexual orgy that took place. You can't have been objected to it. You were part of it.
The barristers representing the children said, if we fill the minds of the jury with all this mumbo jumbo about Satanism, devil worship and black witchcraft, the members of the jury won't believe a word the child is saying. Indeed, some of them wouldn't wish to believe a word the child was saying, and the case would break down.
Some children claim that they have seen babies microwaved. In other words, put in a microwave oven, and they have said it then fizzled and whatever.
People have often said to me, you know, how do I know that children aren't lying? How do social workers and doctors and everybody? Well, a very low percentage of children lie about this particular kind of problem, or any kind of child sexual abuse. Sometimes because of their tender years, they don't even have the know-how to put this into words unless they've experienced it. And because you know the fear mechanisms around the child cannot be done in any artificial way, that these children are genuinely, absolutely terrified. If you talk to them, and I have talked to witches, I have talked to people who have been still in, are really subconsciously quite frightened and fearful of what they're doing to their children, but they don't seem to be able to stop it. I once had an experience where a black witch actually rang me up and said her son was about to attain the age of 7 years old and was to be initiated, and could I save her son?
Nurses, doctors, lawyers, there was judges that I'd been up in court in front of involved.
I have never yet met a happy Satanist. They are very unhappy people. They usually have drugs or drink problems. They wander the earth looking for some purpose in life and gaining nothing. And I have heard from other Satanists that quite a high proportion of them do kill themselves in the end. So I really cannot understand why anybody would get into such a destructive way of life.
Now, that was a clip there from a documentary in the 1980s, including several bits of an interview with the Conservative MP Geoffrey Dickins, who handed this paedophile dossier, in fact several, to the Home Secretary Leon Britton. I mean, Martin, after he'd done that, rather than investigate, Leon Britton then lost those dossiers. Obviously, he's in charge of a big department, the Home Office. But the problem was that he was then phoned up with death threats, this MP was, and also had his home burgled a couple of times. So, I mean, this also coincided, I suppose, with a lot of kind of the shutdown of a lot of the mainstream media's investigative journalism around the late 80s, early 90s. Some of the last really good documentaries were being made by people like the BBC. But by the latest cover-up does almost make you want to, as I'm doing tonight, revisit some of these older problems that we've had in the past.
Well, I think the problem with the stuff of satanic sexual abuse and so on is that it's one kind of abuse. And there's all sorts of other kinds as well, and we shouldn't get hung up about that it's some kind of, it's all to do with Satanism, because for some of it may be, but a lot of it isn't. I mean, the King Cora Boys Home in Northern Ireland, which of course has been excluded from the latest investigation, all the evidence there suggests that MI5 were using it in order to blackmail various
there
people
also
that
seems
they wanted
to, be
to blackmail,
a
and that's
attempt.
What was going on.
It also seems to be a deliberate attempt to sort of mix up witchcraft and Satanism, and almost try and make one.
Well,
one.
There's an attempt to make it all sound more incredible. I think what I think is fundamental underlying all of this is that sexual abuse of children has been used as a tool of blackmail by the intelligence services, and that's what we're talking about, VIP paedophilia. The people at the top have all, as many of them, have been compromised as a result of having sex with underage children, and therefore they're then politically pliable, and that's why it's been covered up, because it's basically a standard modus operandi of the intelligence services.
One of the police officers there was talking about an inquiry in Nottinghamshire in the 1980s, which apparently didn't get very far. It seems we have inquiry after inquiry after inquiry, but we never can get to the hub of the problem. And what I'm suggesting really is that the Home Office is one of the biggest institutions which is at the heart of the problem.
Well, they will have these networks are embedded within the establishment and orchestrated by the intelligence services. They're in a very strong position to either prevent any investigation or to thwart any independent investigation that actually starts.
There's been various attempts over
the
years.
They just
start. I mean, that was from the 80s. In the 1990s, Roger Cook, the investigative journalist, did a programme where he also looked into satanic ritual abuse, which is just one form, as you said, Martin, of abuse. And one of the psychotherapists who takes this very seriously is Valerie Sinison. She said that certain of the accusations against Jimmy Savile really did prove that this kind of abuse, he was involved in this kind of abuse, which it shouldn't be entirely surprising to anyone that's read up on the whole Savile scandal. But this is from Roger Cook in the 1990s, and this short clip here is from a documentary called The Devil's Work, which went out on ITV. Central Television produced it.
Tonight, we seek out those who do the devil's work.
Satanism is on the increase. In fact, it's going through an explosion at the present time. And has been over the last 30 years.
So Satan's PR is pretty good.
Satan's PR is doing a very good job these days, and the problem is the churches are not combating it as they should do.
We wanted to question Chris Bray about his publication, The Lamp of Thoth, which has carried want ads for dead bodies, articles advocating sacrificial murder, and is the platform for Michael Aquino's new British recruiting drive.
Satan screwed up my life completely, and I'm fortunate because I got out.
People who've had to counsel those who were victims.
My children have seen evil and been touched by evil, and thankfully now they are beginning to know some other life.
The feeling of wanting vengeance.
They've had ritualistic things done to them with snakes, with crucifixes. They've been taught to pray to the devil. Well, they were in fact brainwashed.
Most of these people are too frightened to be identified. Some of the children are wards of court and may not be identified.
Jesus, we ask that you will be with.
Amongst the victims is the 12-year-old son of Jean Bolanowski.
That you will give them your protection, that you will.
Well, he'd been made to eat human secretion, he'd been drugged. It's changed his whole attitude. He's petrified of going out on his own and things now. When it first all come out, they told him if he ever told anyone what happened to him, they'd kill me and they'd kill him. So that's one of the reasons he dared talk about it. Plus, whenever we did go out, he kept saying there was somebody following him and he was turning round all the time. In the end, he couldn't cope with it. One night he set his bedroom alight, saying that he had to burn the devil out. And he was just totally wrecked by the whole mess.
It makes me feel angry and sad. Angry that some people can treat children and susceptible adults in this way. And sad because those children are going to have to live a life affected by what these adults have done.
In a way, Martin, it's all about fear, this, isn't it? Because whether or not these claims are correct, the idea is that people actually don't want to think about it. And those who are involved in it are afraid that there'll be retribution if they talk about it or go to the police.
Well, the fact of the matter is, Tony, that hundreds of children every year in this country are killed by their carers. It's been going on for a very long time, and that's just... before we get to the more extravagant...
And if we look at some of these recent inquiries, many of those abused children were in the care system, supposedly
indeed,
under the care of the
indeed
government. I mean, particularly that Rotherham inquiry.
Yeah.
And a lot of it, that didn't really come out so much at the time, but almost all the children involved in that were in care
yeah
homes.
Yeah, because in actual fact, evil people target those kind of children. I mean, there's lots of people go missing every year, and those people tend to be people... I mean, do you remember Fred West killing all of those single women? And they were all single women who'd run away from home or come out of care. They didn't have any relatives, and so they disappeared and nobody even knew they'd gone. And I'm afraid there is a huge underbelly of our society where all this stuff goes on. But the VIP paedophile stuff is related to people at the top, and as I said to you earlier, that's to do with the intelligence services manipulating.
I mean, will they be saying, hang on, this is national security, we can't allow an inquiry into
well
this.
It's not just that's the one of the ways they'll try and block inquiries, but in actual fact they've used this as a mechanism for blackmailing political figures and other senior people from the get-go. And it's a standard procedure that they've that's what the King Korah Boys Home investigation was all about. And of course it's been taken out of the inquiry because that's probably the most politically sensitive of all. But of course boys from King Korah said that they weren't just abused in King Korah, they were taken over to the other side of the water, to this side of the water, and were abused in Britain as well as in Northern Ireland.
Well, there was also the Franklin scandal over in the United States. I mean, it's easy to say, isn't it, oh well, this sort of thing doesn't happen anymore, but the chances are
no social worker working in this country would say that child abuse doesn't happen. Of course it happens. It happens all the time. And there's far too much of it. But of course we can't... there is supposedly a whole, policing system and social work system to try and get on top of it. But of course the VIP paedophile scandal is more to do with the establishment blackmailing itself. So that therefore politicians and others will do as they're told when we go to war with Iraq or whatever it is.
The police play a key role in all of this, of course. Absolutely necessary. And in certain occasions resources have been taken away from child protection teams within the police. Also, we've seen this week, Martin, in some footage of Israeli policemen who are basically going in and beating people up. And you do wonder, I mean, they're Palestinians, so obviously those police were racist police. And in some way, you do wonder, I mean, who do you call if the police are beating you up? You can't call the police.
Well, this is an issue, isn't it? Is there a way of dealing with a situation or a problem by working through the system? You've got to try. But of course, if you can't, then you take other steps. And of course, that's what happened in Northern Ireland in the late 60s. People realised that the state wasn't going to treat this stuff seriously, and they took the law into their own hands with all of the consequences that subsequently followed.
And we've seen time and again, actually, police, both in this country, the states, in other places, actually taking advantage of the position where it's actually is almost a kind of form of impunity for the police that are very unlikely to be prosecuted. A couple of weeks ago, we heard on the 9/11 special from Aaron Russo. He was the film producer, but he also, before he became a film producer, ran a nightclub in Chicago. And so I thought it'd be interesting to have a listen now to his experience with the US police.
My club became a hangout for the hippies, you know, and because they wanted to go to Chicago and protest what was going on. And I was having a concert at my club one night to raise money, and the police raided the nightclub, my club, for no reason at all. And I was standing outside in my office, looking overlooking the street, and I saw all these paddy wagons pulling up in front of my club. And I was a 24-year-old kid. You know, I had no experience at all, really. I said, what are these paddy wagons doing here? And then I saw all these cops getting out of the paddy wagons coming into my club. I said, oh my God, they're raiding me. And so I ran down to the stage, and I got on the stage, and I stopped the band from playing. And I said to the people in the audience, we're being raided, you know, so sit down on the floor, cooperate, you know, and pull out your identification and cooperate with the police. And as I said that, two of the cops from behind threw me onto the floor and grabbed me and started dragging me out of the club. I'm going, you know, victory, victory, you know, playing it for all it was worth at the time. I was a kid. And then I saw the fire department there, and the fire department was dumping garbage cans, the garbage, all over the floor. And I thought to myself, well, why are they doing that? You know, very quickly, as they were dragging me out. And I didn't quite understand it. So they threw me into the paddy wagon. As I got into the paddy wagon, one of the cops grabbed my testicles from behind and squeezed. And I went into the paddy wagon in gigantic pain. And the next person that came into the paddy wagon, the cop, as he was stepping in, the cops took the billy club, smashed him on the head with it, and just split his skull. You know, for no reason. I mean, there was nothing wrong.
So that was kind of your wake-up.
That was my awakening. Like, what is going on? Well, I thought this was America. So I initially blamed it on Chicago and Mayor Daley. Think it was just that it was Chicago. And anyway, I went. It was the headlines of the newspapers the next day. You know, there was my picture in the newspapers. The headlines: Electric Theater short-circuited. It was raided. And in the article, they went ahead and they said that the reason they raided the club was because the fire department came there and saw it was messy, full of garbage, and the hippies started attacking them, which was totally not true.
Those dirty hippies.
It was totally false. You know, it was a complete fabrication.
So they ran a false flag on you. They framed you.
Yeah, of course. You know, and I was in shock. I said, people lie like that? People actually do these things? I couldn't believe it. You know, it was like, it was an awakening to me. And I went on television, I told people on television that they lied. Nobody cared. Nobody cared what the truth was. You know, it was shocking to me. And then a week or 2 weeks later, I forget exactly what it was, two cops come to see me, a lieutenant and a sergeant, a captain and a sergeant. And they said, Mr. Russo, we're sorry if you got hurt that night at the club and the raid, but we're here to tell you that if you want to keep the club open, it's going to take $2,000 a month, and we're going to come see you once a month, and whenever we have to raid you, we're going to call you, you know, and we'll let you know we're going to come in tonight and raid you.
This was mafia.
Well, the police mafia.
Yeah.
You know? And it was actually more interesting than that. They said, listen, there's the A plan, there's the B plan, and there's the super deluxe plan. And this one, of course, each one, of course, that much money a month. Which one do you want?
What was the super deluxe?
That's the one I took. That was a $2,000 a month plan. And I took that plan, and I paid them $2,000 a month, and they left me alone. And whenever they were going to raid the club, they would come there, we're going to raid, we're going to have a phony raid tonight, you know, just to look good for the people in the neighborhood, you know.
So that was your first big education?
That was my education into corruption in government. You know, but I really thought that was basically Chicago. I didn't realize it was the whole country was like that. And so that was my wake-up call that people lie and cheat and steal. And I thought everybody was always honest and nice and decent. And I had no idea about any of these things. Finally, one day they came to me and they said, look, we can't take your money anymore. I said, why, what's up? What's going on? I said, we have to close your club. There's elections coming, and the alderman and the neighbor don't want you open anymore. So we can't take your money. So I had to go to court and fight them, and they were trying to close the club. And then one night there was a fire, and the club never reopened again. The club just closed, and that was the end of the club. And they burned me down.
I think it's an interesting story, Martin. But, I mean, I think we have to say there is a different sort of culture here with the police in the UK. But it is worrying when you're telling people to go to the police to sort these sorts of things out, particularly when it comes to child sexual abuse. He's talking there about a kind of police mafia in America. And what worries me more than anything else is that we seem to import a great deal of our policy from the United States.
Well, we're a colony of the United States, Tony. That's why we're going to go to war with Iran, even though nobody in this country's got any interest in it whatsoever. That's why we've created a base in Bahrain, because the Americans want us to, and we just do as we're told. And the fact that this sort of stuff's been going on forever, that doesn't mean that the police are not to be trusted. They've got to prove themselves.
What about Aaron's comment there, nobody could cared what the truth was?
Well, the problem with criminals of all kinds, whatever level they are in the social hierarchy, is that they're criminals and they don't want to be caught and they don't want people to catch them and they want to get away with what they want to get away with. And, of course, as we very well know, there's one law for the rich and one law for the poor.
Time to sign off now for the Murdoch News at 8. Coming up on Facebook, possibly, is Arabian Nights with Mohammed Mekhali, but it is Ramadan, so maybe not. Thanks to our guest, Cabinet Member for Transport Connectivity, Labour councillor for Eastville, Vari Threlfall, and Lib Dem councillor Mark Wright. Also, thanks to Old Labour Oxford economist Martin Summers, you heard there. Our sister show Dialects on next Tuesday at noon. This show's page, podcast, story links, comment page is at thisweek.org.uk. You'll find me on Twitter at Tony Gosling. Here's wishing you a relaxing and enjoyable and hot Sunday this weekend. Do please join us for the Bilderberg 2018 Turin Politics Show at 6 o'clock next week. God bless, and don't let the banksters get you down.
Bringing you national news on the hour, live from the Sky News Centre.